Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The following episode contains graphic material and talk of suicide that may be triggering to some audiences. If you are in distress, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 to be confidentially connected with someone in your area.
People kept telling me, like, you have a story to tell, like, you have a reason for being here. We may not know what it is, but I feel like it's connected with what happened to you. And basically, a lot of people were telling me, like, you might not be able to change your circumstance, but you'll be able to change someone else's life. You're going to be able to make an impact. I can't help but look back and think all the way back into the day that I killed my dad, trying to shoot myself that day, and the gun being empty all the way until now. Countless suicide attempts, things that normally would kill someone. So I can't help but think, like, maybe there is a reason that I defy the odds. And I guess every day is about trying to find that reason. Even after telling my story, trying to use what happened to make a change to better other people's lives, because there are so many people out there who probably don't feel like they have a voice, and it's taken me almost 10 years to feel like I've even had a voice. So I guess my point is that at the time, like, you feel like it's over, and it never really is.
We've come to the final episode of this special series, but is it really the end for Crystal Howell? Once a lost and struggling teen, a product of her unstable and tumultuous upbringing, Crystal has accepted the responsibility of taking her dad's life.
Now that you've heard all that she went through, did she get the sentence she deserved? It is a topic that is widely contested and hotly debated. Should teens be given life sentences, or do they deserve a second chance at a future? I'm Melissa McCarty.
And I'm Kelly McClear. We bring you the conclusion of Killing Dad, a First Degree Mistake.
Looking back, knowing what you know now, how do you think things would have been different? What would you have done in retrospect?
Well, I probably would have ran into the woods and maybe hid or waited or something different. Anything different, I guess. Maybe let him kill me, I don't know. But I feel like anything would be better than living with it. It's not easy. But honestly, I don't know, because when you're sitting in a jail cell, you know, a million things run through your head. I could have done this, I could have done that. But at the time, it doesn't seem like there are a million options. It only seems like there's one. Now, I know now that my dad was going to kill me, and that's just something that's hard to accept, too, to know that somebody that's so close to you, I don't know, I think of the way that it's a betrayal to me, and in the same way that I feel that betrayal, I betrayed my dad. So are we really all that different? somebody asked me one time after I was locked up for a couple of years, they had asked me, do you ever wonder how he would have died if you hadn't killed him? Like, that's how they said it. And I just looked at them and I said, no, that's not what I think of. I think of all the ways he might have lived, all the changes he could have made. And I just stayed away from him. He's dead now. I'll never know what he could have been. I'll never know if he could have changed. I'll never know if things could have been better or if I could have got him help. I took that away from both of us, and now I guess I'm the one left wondering what could have been.
As it stands right now, Crystal Howell will be in her 40s when she's eligible for her first parole hearing. In the meantime, she recently threw a Hail Mary pass by way of filing a MAR, a motion for appropriate relief.
Among the items listed in the MAR are newly discovered evidence. The plea was unlawfully induced. The conviction was obtained by the use of a coerced confession and ineffective counsel. For a legal interpretation of this, we asked famed former California Deputy District Attorney Matt Murphy.
So every state has a different name for that sort of thing. Essentially what that is she is she's presenting new mitigating information in the hopes that the court will reevaluate her sentence. But again, part of the problem here is she did that herself, right? So she threw everything against the wall.
Crystal doesn't have the money for an attorney and had no access to legal aid in prison. So she filled out the MAR on her own. What she threw against the wall was a lot, but not everything, as you've heard in detail in this podcast. Crystal sent us a copy of the MAR, and the Superior Court judge for Haywood County denied all nine of the motions Crystal filed.
A way more effective strategy, I think, for any defense is you take the best piece of mitigating evidence, maybe the best two or three. You focus in on those and say, look, like in her case, here's evidence that my father was actually abusive and this was not presented before. Please give me relief based on that. It's almost like if you have a couple of really good things, you don't want to dilute them with a bunch of crap that isn't going to help you.
We asked Matt if Crystal can file multiple appeals or if this is possibly the end of the road for her.
She may not, depending on the procedural laws of North Carolina, she may have exhausted that at the state level, but she can file that in federal district court. She can go to them with seeking habeas relief, but she's, she could do that herself. What I see happening in her case, probably long before she is successful, would be I see somebody intervening with knowledge of the case or some sort of either national or perhaps legislative change in North Carolina where juveniles are, afforded additional review. You never really run out of appeals, okay, which is another thing. Once you're done with state appeals, that's when you can go to federal court. Now, in a case like this, she can appeal to, juvenile advocacy groups to sponsor an appeal based on this new information. And I could see that happening.
There is another person Crystal could appeal to, the current prosecutor in Haywood County, North Carolina.
In this circumstance, I think that this woman is certainly going to consider anything that she hears, whether the court has denied it or not. Every prosecutor is trained from day one that you must maintain an open mind and listen to all sides throughout. So if you guys presented evidence to her of abuse, something that is truly mitigating, I guarantee she would consider it. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if in a case like this, 30 to life, it's heavy for a juvie that killed her own father. That's and especially in a plea, that's a heavy sentence. This was her dad. There's a dynamic there. She's the product of a bad divorce. She had some mental health issues, and that maybe in that mess, there's enough mitigating evidence in the mind of a good professional prosecutor where she gets a reduced sentence.
But will that be the case? Can she get a reduced sentence? We went directly to the district attorney for answers. Ashley Welch is the current district attorney for the 43rd District of North Carolina, and she agreed to talk to us.
I've been a prosecutor for 19 years. I've never been a defense lawyer. So I'm coming at it from a prosecutor's standpoint. However, this was a really strong case for the prosecution. Very strong. And she was risking a lot in going to trial. And so she had to weigh whether she was going to take a life with the possibility of parole. And as young as she was granted parole after 25 years, she could still have a life. Or was she going to take a chance of being convicted of first-degree murder with no possibility of parole? And those would be the two decisions that she was weighing. Now, it's not a great outcome for her by any stretch of the imagination. But she could have faced a far worse sentence if she'd gone to trial.
Rather than taking her chances at a jury trial, she signed a plea deal. But Crystal says she was threatened with perjury by then public defender Bridget Aguirre if she didn't sign the plea deal accepting first degree murder.
When I read the note, it sounded like Ms. Howell was telling her attorney, I'm giving you permission to engage in plea negotiations to a second degree murder plea or a life with parole. And life with parole is what she ended up getting. And in terms of what Ms. Howell says about her attorney telling her that she would be charged with perjury if she didn't take the plea after signing that, I have such a hard time believing that. Ms. Aguirre, who's now retired, I believe, but she was a very well thought of, reputable, longtime public defender, one of the best in the state. I cannot imagine that she would have done that. That just doesn't sound like her. And when I look at everything, and I did look at everything, because I was really concerned, especially after what y'all sent me, the last thing that I want to do is have somebody sitting in prison that doesn't need to be there or is there for too long. And so I have read her file again about 5 times. And then also sent it to the investigators and sent it to one of my chief assistant DAs so that it wasn't just me. And we've got her psychological records, her school records, DSS records, all the way back to when Ms. Howell's in kindergarten. And so based on the totality of everything that I have, and then the knowledge that I have of Ms. Aguirre and her reputation, I just have a really hard time believing that she would have said that to her client.
Ms. Welch went on to explain why Crystal's Mar was denied.
So in terms of why it was denied, I can't speak for the judge, but I can tell you that when I looked at it, I could tell that it wasn't likely to be an MAR that was going to be granted. I have seen, and a lot of times the judges get those written by individuals on their own. And so it doesn't really make a difference when they're reading it in terms of, is it a pro se individual writing it themselves or an attorney? Except for an attorney, of course, has the skill set to document exactly what needs to be documented. I will say, for whatever it's worth, and this won't make Ms. Howell feel any better, but the judge that would have reviewed her MAR is very, very careful. And when he reads these, he doesn't just summarily deny them for the sake of denying them. As prosecutors, we're answering these all the time. And it didn't even get to that stage. Now, Ms. Howell could reach out to prisoner legal services and reach out to attorneys, and they could refile. But when I look at the MAR statute, I don't see, based on what I have right now, a reason for the granting of an MAR, unless she knows something that I don't know, which she may.
One item that was never presented before was the letter that Crystal's dad, Michael, wrote to Holt that depicted his unhinged mental state.
That's the first I've heard of it. Certainly, it's something that would be helpful for us to have a copy of. I can't promise you that that's going to make a difference in terms of a new hearing, because ultimately, at the end of the day, what we're dealing with is a young lady who waited till her dad was asleep and killed him in his sleep. Now, I'm not telling you that there aren't reasons for it. I'm not going to tell you that she had this great childhood. And she certainly had mitigating factors. That's what I would call all of those things, is mitigating factors. And that played into our decision in not pursuing the life without parole on her. But certainly, part of our job as prosecutors is to do justice. And so that doesn't always mean, and a lot of times it doesn't mean, a conviction or the most serious conviction that one can get. A lot of times the public doesn't understand that. So I'd be interested to see it.
Do you believe Crystal's claims of sexual abuse by her uncle and physical and mental abuse at the hands of her father?
I do. I mean, I don't want to say for sure that, yeah, she's telling the truth, but one of her mental health diagnoses out of several is indicative of a sexual abuse and trauma. So that doesn't surprise me. And also in a lot of the ways that Ms. Howell was acting and some of her psychological and her school history and her running away, and she was very sexually active, that's classic. Of a young person that's been sexually abused. And certainly it sounds like, in addition to that, it was a very contentious and very difficult divorce between her mom and dad. And she was going back and forth. So I do tend to believe that.
When asking Ms. Welch if Crystal had any options or avenues when it came to getting a reduction in her sentence, she brought up the Raise the Age Act that was put into effect in North Carolina in December of 2019.
At the time that Ms. Howell committed this crime, North Carolina had not passed the what we call Raise the Age Act. So at the time, the minute that Ms. Howell turned 16, she was considered an adult. Now, that's not the case anymore. The legislature has passed the Raise the Age Act. However, there's exceptions in that act that if you are 16 or 17 years old and you commit a certain class of felonies in North Carolina, first degree being murder being one of them, you are transferred as an adult.
Does Crystal have a chance of, say, a second chance at a resentencing hearing under the Raise the Age to say, hey, can you take another look at my case and see if I could get a sentence reduction under the Raise the Age Act?
You know, I've reviewed all of the motion for appropriate relief statutes. And of course, the law went into effect about this life with parole aspect. I don't ever want to say absolutely not, because there's always a possibility. But based on the facts that we have today and right now, the chances are very slim. A judge would have to find certain factors to grant her a new hearing. And then out of that hearing, she would have, or the judge would have, several options. One would be a resentencing hearing. Two would be a new trial. Three, and you would have to show certain issues, but they could throw out the conviction altogether. But once a plea is entered, and a judgment is entered, in North Carolina, we have these motion for appropriate relief statutes. And under that statute, in order for someone to be resentenced, very specific things must be shown by the petitioner. So in this case, Ms. Howell. Number one, ineffective assistance of counsel. And you've got to show that that counsel would have caused, that ineffective assistance would have caused a different outcome for her. New evidence that we wouldn't have had at the time, that we believe and the court would believe that could cause a different outcome. If her constitutional rights were violated, if the statutes changed, those are all things that could open her back up to a new sentencing hearing.
But what about just based on the medical research of a juvenile's brain development, just that alone, where one mistake, sets the rest of their life?
So I believe in that research, and I believe with the scientists and all of that research about brain development. So I won't tell you that I don't believe it. However, as a prosecutor, when you're looking at the laws are what they are for a reason. We're allowed to treat 16, 17-year-olds as adults in certain types of crime, one of which being first-degree murder. That's kind of the ultimate bad act, you know, is to kill someone with premeditation and deliberation. And it's our indication as prosecutors that in this case, that's what Ms. Howell did. So we're having to weigh a justice and a safety issue. So you're looking at her age, which certainly makes her more sympathetic, her background, her mental illness, and her upbringing. But you've got to balance it with the safety to the community and punishment and justice. And she will get out and still be an adult and not old. So in balancing those two factors, I feel like that's fair. I mean, the risk that we take, if we say, well, your brain's not developed and we know that, you know, until your mid-20s, does that mean that everybody who commits murder gets a pass? And that's really dangerous.
Author and developmental psychologist Dr. James Garabino has testified as an expert witness in countless juvenile murder trials, and he disagrees on the safety concern and has a specific time frame most teen killers should serve.
I think having worked on, you know, many, many, many cases of resentencing of juveniles who committed murder, it's pretty clear that she should get a resentencing hearing in which the full story leading up to the murder of her father is told, as well as, you know, what the story is in the years that followed. It's the murder occurred in 2014, so there's a significant period of time to see how she has behaved since then. She's still, she's just about 25 now, so that it's only now that we could presume that she has a mature brain and is fully equipped to deal with these issues. So I think there's all these reasons why a resentencing hearing and a resentence itself would make sense. Based on my, you know, work in this area for many, many years, I came to the conclusion that a sort of developmentally appropriate sentence is more like 20 years for a teenager. Enough years to get them to the point where they have a mature brain, and then a period of years, let's say 8 or 10, to use that brain to process the issues that got them in trouble in the first place.
At the end of our conversation, we encourage D.A. Welch to listen to all episodes of Crystal's story.
I will listen to it, and I will let y'all know if I hear something or there's something that caught my interest that changed my mind. If y'all come up with something else, I'm always willing to look.
Well, we did come up with something. Since D.A. Welch does not believe Crystal's claim that her court-appointed public defender, Bridget Aguirre, forced her to sign a plea deal she didn't want to sign, Crystal took a polygraph to address those claims. While a polygraph is not admissible as evidence in court, it can factor into prosecutorial decisions. Lisa Rybakov is an EPA advanced-trained polygraph examiner with International Investigative Group and the one to administer the testing.
Did Bridget Aguirre pressure you into signing the plea deal?
Yes.
Did you tell Bridget Aguirre that you did not want to accept the plea deal for the first-degree murder?
Yes.
Did Bridget Aguirre tell you that you could be charged with perjury if you didn't accept the plea deal for first-degree murder?
Yes.
Did Bridget Aguirre ask you to sign a handwritten note pertaining to your plea deal before you received the actual deal from the DA's office?
Yes.
What was the result of that polygraph examination regarding her public defender, Bridget Aguirre?
There were no significant reactions in response to the relevant questions on all three polygraph tests that were administered about this topic.
And so what does that mean?
That means that she was telling the truth on all three polygraphs.
For anyone listening that does not believe the accounts of abuse she experienced at the hands of her dad, Crystal also wanted to address those claims in a separate polygraph test.
Did your father ever fire a gun in your direction?
Yes.
Did your father ever strike you, leaving a mark or bruise on your body?
Yes.
On the day of your father's death, did your father threaten to harm you?
Yes.
Did you ever, on any winter evening, did your father instruct you to spend the night in the woods because it was your punishment for running away?
Yes.
And did she pass, fail, or inconclusive?
With regards to this examination and after scoring the physiological tracings that her body produced in response to these four questions, I'm able to render an opinion that no significant reactions were present and that she was telling the truth on all four relevant questions.
You spent a couple hours with Crystal during the polygraph examinations. What was your impression of her?
Crystal has a great personality. She is funny and vivacious, and she is strong-minded considering the circumstances that have occurred in her life and the current situation that she's currently in pertaining to her incarceration. She is educated. She is likable, personable. And she, again, she is forthcoming with the information. She's not denying anything pertaining to the responsibility of her actions. She understands that there are consequences for behaviors. And she's just wanting to go ahead and make sure that her side of the story is heard and that what she has been saying this entire time is the truth. And I had the opportunity to validate her thinking and her thought process, as well as her memory recall, to determine that she is not being deceptive and that she is not showing any indications of the deception.
Throughout our months and years of speaking with Crystal, all she has ever wanted is to be heard.
I felt like maybe because I was taking a plea, people didn't feel the need to provide the facts or the real evidence or the mitigating factors of my case. And that was something that really bothered me because I feel like I was sentenced and nobody ever really knew what happened.
I just don't get why not do your job right the first time? Why not look into things deeper? Because if y'all can find this stuff out by simply just speaking to a few people, I feel like they wanted to believe the worst.
Over the years, Crystal's great aunt, Brenda Ennis, has stood by her side through it all. When you heard about the actions of Mike to Crystal, do you believe that that was Mike doing those things? Was that in his character, in his nature?
Oh, I believe it 100%, but I think he had snapped. I think he had been gone so far with so much hatred and bitterness in his heart that he snapped and went too far and probably couldn't get back, you know. You know, none of us want to believe that it's in any of our nature, but if you're hurt enough and you're desperate enough and you're isolated enough and you don't have really anybody to call your own, you're going to do some different things.
She killed her father. No doubt about that. Do you believe she deserves to be in prison for the rest of her life?
I don't think she deserved prison. I think under the circumstances of what transpired, she needed psychiatric help and healing. And I can tell you, had I been in Crystal's place, and I believed what she believed, I probably would have did the same thing.
For
everyone who can't get over the headlines, the sensational headlines, for all the people sitting at home going like, I was abused, I was physically beaten, I didn't kill. What would you say to those people when it's like, I had a rough childhood too, I didn't kill?
I would say, unless you've walked in her shoes, you can't judge. When they hear and know the full details of what all transpired. And, you know, a lot of it, to me, the sensationalism, I've heard more people talk about what took place. They're just repeating what they were told and heard. You know, they don't know what took place. And the whole circumstances were so far from how it was portrayed. And they want to make it as nasty and salacious as they can possibly make it.
We traveled to Maggie Valley, North Carolina, where life has moved on without Crystal. But still there, living with the after effects of this tragedy, is Crystal's good friend, Taylor.
I don't think Crystal is a bad person. I don't think she's a monster. I don't think she's heartless. I just think she did a bad thing when she was put in a bad situation that she didn't know how to get out of. And I'm not going to sit here and say that she hasn't caused trauma for me, because I mean, I'm still going to counseling. I have nightmares. I wake up in cold sweats all the time, but I still love her. And I don't think that if she would have known what this was going to do to the people that she loved, if she would have actually thought about the repercussions of what was going to happen, she never would have done it.
I feel like you know her the best of everyone. And what would you say to the district attorney who is looking at the facts?
I would ask her to put herself in the position of a scared 17-year-old who has been through mental health issues and that has been exasperated by mental and physical abuse. And the parties that she, or the officials or adults that she has tried to reach out to, has, I mean, not done what they were supposed to do. What do you do in that position? I mean, you're not an adult yet. As much as we want to say, you know, 17's close to being an adult, 18's an adult. Our brains don't stop maturing till we're 25. I mean, it's just, she's not thinking at 100% adult capacity. And on top of that, she's mentally ill.
When Crystal pulled the trigger, she never anticipated how many would feel the effects of her actions, as Crystal's friend Summer explained to us.
How has this affected you and changed you?
This has changed my life, honestly. I still struggle with it, obviously. That's not something that you ever really get over. Trust-wise, I don't really keep friends because of that. It affects my day-to-day, as it would probably anybody. Eventually, you do get desensitized to it after exposure. But there's still that trust aspect. I think the more people talk about it, and although it's emotional as hell, obviously, like, I feel like as a whole, people need to come together and realize that emotions are normal. But mental health is serious. It can cause people to do crazy things that they don't even know, that they can't explain themselves. Like, I'm sure she didn't want to do that, but you know, I can't speak for anybody else, but I know how she was. I know how she is. She's not a bad person. She's not.
At the heart of Crystal's story, her case, and her childhood is the importance of mental health and seeking help when you needed it. The time Crystal has spent behind bars reflecting has given her a deeper understanding of what she went through in her formidable teenage years.
I feel like I said, that my mental illness probably did play a factor in it. I don't think it's an instance where, oh, I'm taking off meds and I just went haywire or anything like that. I think I needed a stable home and a stable environment and a place that was safe. I think those are things I needed. Maybe somebody to listen when I'm asking for help. Why didn't I get those things? Is that not an equivalent to a mental health medication? You know, all those factors are important to your mental health. I feel like even if you're on mental health medication, if you're thrown in
But then with wolves, what's going to happen? I mean, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get eaten alive. Like, you're not safe. I don't know. I just feel like, it's a crutch. I don't want to blame everything on my mental health. I feel like everybody had their role in this. I don't think it was all one person's fault. There's a saying, it says, no snowflake feels like it's responsible for the avalanche, you know? I feel like I was portrayed, though, to be this, like, animal, basically. Like that I just can't behave, and I just can't do this, I can't do that. And it's just always about what I couldn't do. I don't know, it's really difficult to put into words. I just feel like, I mean, my dad's death is my fault, and I take responsibility for that. But I don't think it was because I was just this terrible person that wanted him gone. It was never anything like that, and I feel like that's how it was made out to be, that I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, and that's the farthest thing from the truth. Looking back, I think I was brainwashed. Like, I didn't realize it at the time, but I'm a very different person today than I was 7, 8 years ago. And I guess I see things a lot clearer now.
The life Crystal had all those years ago is all but a glimmer in the rearview mirror. Time moves on. People move away. Friends get married, have families of their own. There's one person, though, that Crystal regrets not having a relationship with the most. Her sister, Sierra.
Whenever I was arrested, you know, I tried to tell her what happened. She didn't believe me. But that didn't change how I felt about her. That's still my sister. Like, whether she believes me or not, that didn't change the dynamic of our relationship. She basically told me, like, whenever I get out, that she's going to be there for me when I come home, that she's going to be able to take care of me, stuff like that. And, you know, I just believed her. And I feel like something changed. Like, because when I came to prison, I've seen my sister once since I've been locked up. I haven't received a single letter from her the whole time I've been locked up.
Crystal doesn't hear much from her mom these days and hasn't spoken to her sister, Sierra, in years. We reached out to both and never received a response. But Crystal hopes the following words will make it to Sierra's ears and heart.
I spent a lot of time crafting this letter to my sister, Sierra, just hoping that she'll get the message. Okay. Last week I called Mom and she told me about a mission trip that you went on and how you helped a woman regain her vision after not being able to see for 30 years. 30 years spent in darkness seemed unfathomable to me until I realized that 30 years is a time span I'm all too familiar with. Then I asked myself a question. Will my sister choose to keep her eyes closed to my situation? Will she remain blind for the next 30 years? The last time I heard your voice was July 4th, 2020. And before that, it was Christmas of 2018. Now I don't even know your phone number. In 8 years, you and Mom haven't sent me a single letter. I don't know what your favorite color is or what your dogs are named. I don't know what you ate for dinner last week or what kind of clothes you wear now that you're an adult. You don't know what kind of music I listen to or that I dated a girl named Morgan for 2 years. You don't know that I've tried to commit suicide 17 times over the span of my incarceration, eager to see my dad again. You and I aren't sisters, we're strangers. How can you hate someone you don't even know? Prisons are made for rehabilitation and growth. I've changed so much in 8 years, but you'd never know. And every day that I spend in the silence and solitude, all I can think is, so this is how Dad felt when everyone left him alone on the mountain. So this is how it feels like to be forgotten. No one has ever asked me if I'm okay. Not before, not after. I spent my life keeping secrets and telling lies, fighting to protect the people that I love, struggling to survive. Do you remember the time that Dad beat you so bad that you literally had to fight, get away from him? Do you remember that fear? Do you remember having to constantly think before you spoke, afraid that your words would make him angry? None of those things stopped after the divorce. The only difference is that once I moved in with Dad, there was no one there to witness the storm. There was no one there to calm it, so it only intensified. For years, all he did was rain down on me, and still no one asked. Facing life in prison has been hard as hell, but the hardest part has been having to face it alone. I felt so many things over the past 8 years. Doubt, fear, anger, confusion. But more than anything, I felt alone. You hate me for the things I've done, but I promise you that I hate myself even more. If I could turn back the time, I would do a million things differently, but I'm unable to do that. I've written you countless letters and apologized in every way I can imagine. All I'm able to do now is grow and work on myself daily. I can't continue living my life in this in-between place, waiting for you. But I need you to know that the time and distance that stands in between us will never stop us from being family. Nothing can erase all the afternoons we spent watching cartoons or undo all the road trips we spent bickering in the back seat. I won't forget riding our bikes to the neighborhood pool or sharing each other's clothes as we got older. Despite the odds and arguments, the memories are what makes us sisters. Through it all, I'll always love you.
Was it cathartic to you in a way to put all these things down on paper and then to read them aloud?
Yeah. I just feel like I'm at a point where if she reaches out, I'll be happy, but if she doesn't, I feel like I can move on.
While she had a message for her sister, Crystal's first love, Tyler, has a message for her.
You know, I'm sorry for everything that happened to her. I mean, I get that, you know, if she knows, if she remembers anything between us, that what we both went through is tragic. You know, no child should have to go through any of the things we both went through. And I hate that her path, you know, took her to something more serious than what mine did. And hope that one day she can accept that everything that happened to her doesn't make who she is. She can still decide who she wants to be and overcome that.
Crystal has been incarcerated since 2014. But the memory of what she has done and thoughts of her father still keep her confined to a prison of another sorts, one that exists in her dreams and in her mind.
This might sound weird, but like sometimes even when the dreams are bad, I like having them because I get to see him again, and that sounds really creepy. But I guess it's just, they're so real that it's like he's alive sometimes. And like maybe like this prison life isn't my life. Maybe this is all the nightmare, and maybe the dreams are what's real.
From hearing you and hearing your story, everybody in your life has let you down. Your father, your mother, your sister. So when the time comes of your 30 years to life, what do you see your life being 25 years from now, 20 years from now?
I guess I see a lot of loneliness, like, I'm trying to think how to explain. I don't know, I feel like I can't go home because I know this is going to sound like weird, but I have this like fear that like if I live with my mom or my sister, if they let me come in there, that they're going to be afraid of me. Like, that they, I don't know. That's how I feel at this point. As of this point, with the sentence I have, I don't really think about when I get out because, you know, I struggle a lot with depression. So a lot of times when I think about the future, I've kind of pictured suicide. I know that's silly, but that's kind of, I feel like there isn't a future at this point because I don't have any job skills. I've never had a license. I'm not going to have any children. I'm not going to know any of these things, how to thrive in society. So I just feel like somewhat it's pointless to continue on. Not really knowing how to survive, not knowing how to pay bills, not knowing how to get a job. It's not... No, I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry.
Not having him to talk to, you know, at night, and not really having someone to guide me and tell me this is the way you need to go. Like, it... Not being able to pick up the phone and call him. guess all those things make it feel real. I don't know, and it just sucks because it's like my whole life, all I wanted was to be somebody that he could eventually look at and be like, that's my kid, that's my daughter. I raised her like a moment where I can make him proud, and now I feel like, where's the moment? I'm living the rest of my life in prison. And I just don't know what the moment's going to be.
Do you see a day or a time when you might come out of this dark forest?
It is hard because it's like everything that I ever saw in my life, I saw with my dad next to me. So for me to be standing in that frame alone, I don't know, even if they let me out today, it'd be difficult to find it without him here. Well, I have a lot of suicidal thoughts. Like, it is easy to just revert back to that old thing, old way of thinking and be like, well, I want to be with my dad, where my dad is, where I want to be. So if I kill myself, I'll be with him. It feels like you're living the same day over and over again, so you feel like you don't have purpose. Like, what is my purpose of being alive? Just to sit here until I die, basically.
It's a heavy weight we carry in sharing Crystal's story, not knowing how it'll end. Kelly, who's known for her strength, shows the impact of telling Crystal's story.
I need you to promise me that you are not going to attempt suicide again.
I can't. I'm just going to be honest. I can't promise that because, it's a mental state thing. It's not like I sit there and be like, all right, now it's time to try again. But I don't know if I can promise that. Because I don't want to break it.
Can you at least make a conscious effort to try?
I can make a conscious effort, yes. But I feel like something changed my perspective on it. I don't know. It's like really hard because when I get to talking about my dad, that's kind of when it starts. But last time I spoke with my therapist, I was talking to her and I told her kind of my concerns because, for the last, year, maybe two, this podcast has kind of been my purpose. It's been what keeps me going to try to get my story out there to help other people. So I asked her, whenever the podcast is over, what do I have? And she just explained to me, there are people that you're helping out there. And if there's a young girl or a young guy that hears what you went through and that you survived it and you're still out there surviving, that's what's going to be important. But if they look you up and see that you've committed suicide, then that's just going to make everything that happened an even greater tragedy. So that kind of changed my perspective a lot on things. I feel pretty good as of the time being. Like, I've been getting sad some, but haven't been thinking about suicide. So that's pretty good.
Well, that is one smart therapist, because I'm not going to lie. When we were thinking about the last episode, right? The line I do not want to have to write or read or say. And I'm going to start crying when I say this, but I don't want to end it with Crystal took her life. I don't want that ending. Right now, you got me crying. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry.
So you understand where we're coming from when we say this, right? We don't want that ending. I don't want that for you.
I guess it took someone outside of my situation to say that, because it's easy for someone who cares about me or is invested in the story or things like that. It's easy for someone like that to say, oh, you have things to live for. Whereas my therapist, she's a fairly new therapist to me, so she doesn't really know much about me. But for her to be able to say that, as a, quote unquote, outsider, that's kind of what sink in a little bit deeper.
And she's 100% right. I mean, everything you would have done would be for naught, because if there was any sense of inspiration in your story, it will all be for nothing because of the outcome. So that's why I wanted you to promise, or at least make a conscious effort not to. I just want to make sure I say that.
Yes, I will make a conscious effort. But I feel like like I said, I feel like I'm doing a lot better than I have in a long while, but that's really her saying that is what made it sink in, because I don't know, what if some other kid hears it? It's like, oh, well, that's the only way I'm going to be able to make it out, and then that's going to be another life that I'm responsible for having lost.
Crystal grew up singing in church, and now the only ones that hear her sing are the concrete walls and the fellow inmates she's behind the barbed wire fences with. Sentenced to 30 years to life, she hopes one day she will be allowed to see the light and walk out of the facility that raised a teen into a woman.
Well, I feel like it's a story that needs to be heard so that other people who are going through the same thing can kind of, I guess, see the light at the end of the tunnel, maybe somewhat. I don't know really what that is yet, but I don't feel like it's too little too late. Maybe for my court case it is, but at this point, is it really about that, or is it how do we stop other people from getting in this situation?
A petition has been created in an effort to get her case another look for a reduced sentence. The petition can be found through change.org, entitled, Please Reduce Crystal Howell's Sentence.
Crystal wants to be an example to struggling and lost teens and others who may feel there's no way out. Her story should be one that everyone going through tough times or issues with mental health, sexual, emotional, physical abuse, or thoughts of suicide should take to heart.
I want to take all the things that happened to me, not to make people who have been through it look differently, look at it differently, but to stop young people beforehand from becoming the thing that I became, before it's too late for them.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.